go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Car Stuff. We've got Nuts and Bolts Part 7, Ben.
Nuts and Bolts Part 7, we're pretty much, this is like an ongoing series, right? That's what we're pretty much doing.
Part 7, can you believe it?
I can't believe it. We're starting to give the Jason movies a run for their money.
That's right. Well, last time, you remember, we ran out of time. We were listing off some listener mail, some Facebook comments, things like that.
Some interesting, like some stuff Scott sees, some project stuff. The thing was, sorry, you guys, if our exit – and our last episode of Nuts and Bolts seemed a bit abrupt. Mm-hmm. But basically what happened is that Scott and I realized we sort of have internal clocks where they're set up so that when we're podcasting, he and I both start to get a little bit antsy around 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. 30 minutes in, we both start to get a little bit weird. And then I don't know why. It's really impressive actually to me. But – no matter what we do, we inherently seem to know that 40 minutes have passed.
Yeah, that's right. Go about 10 minutes longer and realize it's just too much. So we back it off and we broke this one up into two parts, or really six and seven. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go ahead and predict that we'll have another abrupt ending today.
Because
we've got another stack of listener mail. We've got we got great listeners, Ben.
Yeah, we love it every time you guys write in, even if you say – mean things. I'm kidding. Nobody, all our listeners are really nice, actually.
Yeah, we've got quite a bit to go through here today. So, just like last time, I don't know if we'll get to everyone, but we'll try. So if you don't hear yours now,
stay tuned.
Yeah, hang on. You might hear it next time.
Is that your De Niro face, dude? Maybe we'll read your email.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. Okay. Do you want to kick it off or you want me to?
Why not? I'll kick it off.
All right.
Here's one from Brian from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay.
All right. Brian wrote in and said that, we mentioned the diesel motor and how it was used to power an electric motor. It made him think of one of his summer jobs in high school, college. Mm-hmm. He grew up in southern Indiana and spent six or seven summers working on the Lake Lemon Conservancy District project, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Started doing odd jobs and maintenance, and then he started to work on something called a weed harvester. Have you ever seen a weed harvester, Ben?
Mm-mm.
Never? Really?
I probably have.
Okay, this is something you see up in the lakes regions in the north and Midwest quite a bit. When weeds and seaweed and things like that start to grow from the bottom of the lake or pond.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. I've never seen one in real life.
This is a big thing that floats extremely slow, and it pulls weeds up on a conveyor belt and kind of throws them into a hopper and lets them dry out, and you can haul them off to the shore. Mm-hmm. But it allows for water sports to occur there, and you know the life to continue. You know, flourish. So it doesn't become overgrown with weeds.
Right.
Well, Brian says that he had several different weeds that he was attacking on these lakes and these weed harvesters. But anyways, it just made him think about it, you know, that a lot of people probably haven't ever seen a weed harvester.
Yeah, Brian, you're right. I haven't.
You know, they're like 40 feet long. They move super slow. They're huge. They're enormous boats.
Yeah.
But he spent countless summer hours just kind of slowly tooling around these lakes, which sounds like kind of a cool job.
Yeah, it seems cool.
But it's, you know, it allows them to do it mechanically rather than use weed killers and other things that might be, dangerous for the fish or, you know, other aquatic life. So, thought it might be a good Car Stuff idea, or at least to, you know, allow somebody to the thought to go to Google and search what a weed harvester is. So Brian, thanks a lot. I don't know if we're going to do a show about it or not. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
If there's enough about it, but, I think just getting the word out there that those are even out there is worthwhile.
So. 'Cause that's news to me. I feel very surprised because usually if I haven't seen a machine, I've heard of it.
You know, if you're in Minnesota or Michigan, Wisconsin, Indiana, any of those states that have a lot of lakes, you'll often see these in the summertime just slowly crawling through the lakes. It's really interesting to watch.
That's probably why. I've never been in those areas during the summertime.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So thanks, Brian.
So Dave in England writes to us and says, "Hi, Ben and Scott. Here's an idea for a possible podcast. Why does a car's performance reduce over time? In other words, you always hear about vintage sports cars having a certain amount of horsepower when it was first built, but nowadays it is reduced down to half or so. An explanation on why and how, such as the key engine components that cause this reduction, would make for a decent podcast."
Good idea.
Good idea,
Very
Dave.
Good idea.
What you guys got?
All right. I got one from Morgan from the internet.
All right.
he's mentioning some airbag videos that we watched. I did watch the videos, by the way, Morgan. Mm-hmm. Pretty funny stuff. Dangerous, but funny. so he mentions works at a shop in downtown Minneapolis. And he's got some of these airbags that he had come across. And I don't know if I should even read it. I guess I should. Why not?
All right.
He puts things like like a bucket on top of an airbag and blows it up and sees how high it goes. And then they put a brake rotor on top of an airbag and blow it up and see how high it goes. That was a bit dangerous. Not recommended, but they also did things like making – should I even read this, Ben? Make a flamethrower out of a fuel filter.
As long as we're not saying that we think anyone should do it.
No. He says that he made clear in the videos that it was foolish at the time and they had no idea what was going to happen. So, they say they won't be doing it again. But I just want to let Morgan know that we did watch the videos. I found them funny, but, with the word of caution that, no one should be doing that.
Funny because we're not standing there in the area.
Yeah, that's right.
Dodging brake rotors.
The brake rotor's not going to come down on my head.
Okay, so I've got one from Yifei?
Sure.
I don't want to mess up the title. Hello, guys. I was just listening to you guys' podcast regarding the biggest trucks, and I've seen the Terex Titan on display. It's actually in the town of Sparwood, British Columbia. It's not in a museum, just displayed outside where you can touch it and see the truck yourself.
Oh, cool.
I've also seen the Caterpillar 797 in action at one of the oil sand projects up in Fort McMurray, Northern Alberta, Canada, where I was doing my geology internship. The reason some of these trucks have a heated dump bucket or bed is because the oil sand, or bituminous sand, is a very viscous compound, almost like tar mixed with sand. And so it needs to be heated or upgraded in order to become crude oil.
Okay. Interesting. I'm glad to know where the Titan is located, so you can go out and see that if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Very good. Here's one from Mike and Joan.
Okay.
And this is one about the Autobahn. And, it's a long note here. It's got five or six good points, but I wanted to read one in particular is that I like the Autobahn episode. A few additions and one correction because I lived in Germany for 2 years from 1999 to 2001 and had a few observations that we might enjoy. The one that I thought was interesting, or the most interesting, was that they'd never heard of anybody being fined for drinking other than alcohol, or eating in the car on the Autobahn, because we mentioned that you could be ticketed for eating.
Yeah.
But they think it's kind of like maybe a case of distracted driving like we'd have here in the United States. It's something that, if they catch you doing it, that's one thing. But if they can prove that it happened to cause an accident, it's not really enforced otherwise.
I see what you're saying. Because they have to directly link it to.
Exactly. It's sort of like, you could be pulled over. You're probably more likely to be pulled over for talking on the cell phone, if you're not hands-free. Rather than drinking or eating. So that's one thing that we had mentioned that,
That's a good point.
I think they could fine you for distracted driving.
So Fred writes to us from Richmond, Virginia, saying, thanks for making such consistently great shows. Oh, you're laying it on thick, Fred. You're too kind. It is funny. He says he's joking here. He's like, thanks for making such consistently great shows. It keeps me awake while on the road. Just think of the lives you are saving. that's why I'm reading that.
We're indirectly saving lives.
I would love to hear an episode or two, if necessary, on the history of British Motor Corporation.
Very good.
You guys know that we have been covering quite a few history of different things, and you didn't know if it was doable. But
sure.
That was worth the thought.
So. EMC.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here's one from Teddy. Teddy writes in about transmissions. Just listening to some older podcasts. One in particular, Learn to Drive a Stick, gave me an idea for a podcast about tractor trailers that are now coming with automatic transmissions, which, you know what? I don't think I had known this. I didn't know that they had automatic transmissions. I thought they still had the gears that you had to split, and there's 20
the
gears.
Crazy
and,
split, 24,
yeah,
12
yeah, exactly,
gears
a 10-speed transmission with, you split the front gears, and I thought it was still very, very difficult.
I've heard of this, but I have not seen one.
That has got to be an incredibly strong automatic transmission.
That has got to be honestly, that's got to be one heck of a smart engineer. Too.
Exactly. Extremely advanced. I mean, to pull all the different loads that it needs to and sometimes empty.
And to switch.
Incredible.
Okay, so I'm going to switch off from listener mail real quick just to do an announcement in addition to our earlier podcast on Unimogs.
An announcement?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just a,
oh, great.
Just a, hey, heads up, everybody. Heads up, Unimog lovers. The 60th birthday or anniversary of the Unimog is coming. Mercedes-Benz is going to help celebrate by holding a special anniversary party on June the 4th. So fans, club members, owners of classic vehicles, drivers, and owners of current models are all invited to the event. So it's going to be hosted at the Wirth plant in Germany where the Unimog is still built today. And they're going to have different exhibitions. You know, you can see the historical Unimogs, which I know you'd be excited about, Scott.
Sure.
Demonstrations on the off-road course, an old against new show.
Oh, I'd love to see the demonstrations.
And a plant tour, which I would especially love to tour the plant. And – in addition, there's going to be a Unimog rally with 60 vehicles driven from Gaggenau, I apologize to the Germans, the original production site, to via the museum to the current production site, and then they're going to continue the party at the museum.
60th anniversary.
60th anniversary.
So Unimog owners, get thee to Germany by June 4th. Is that what you said?
Yeah, June 4th.
June 4th. All right. Very good. Okay. Let's go back to a few more listener mails and then I'll make some announcements of my own.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to alternate.
Okay. Good idea. This one is from Jamie from Indianapolis, Indiana again.
Cool.
Just catching up on some of the podcasts on brake pad, one run recently on brake pads. She says, guess what? I just changed my own brake pads last week on my Jeep. I just wanted you to share this because I'm a girl, first of all, and says, if I can do it, anyone can. You're right that the hardest part about changing the brake pads is getting the tires off, as two of my lug nuts were stripped and I had to have a tire shop get them off before I could even start. So, you know, once you're past that though, it's all downhill. It's very, very satisfying to do this job on your own. So, I don't know, she's just happy that we were talking about it and happy that she tried it on her own because it was worthwhile.
Awesome, Jamie.
And you know, not too complex, so anybody could do it.
More power to you, Jamie. You know, we're all about people doing things on their own and being independent.
Good work.
So Michael writes in to say, hey, guys, I was wondering if you could do a podcast on engine mishaps, such as backfires, et cetera. I would love to hear what happens when and why engines backfire. I can't really think of any other ideas, but I think you guys might be able to make a podcast about this topic.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, good one. Let's see. This one is from David from Lincoln, Nebraska. And David's got a couple of nicknames for us.
Oh.
Haven't heard these in a while.
Okay.
Ben Big Ben. Oh. He calls Big Ben. Okay. And Scott Rubber Duck. Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's awesome.
You know what? This is convoy stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Rubber Duck. Yeah.
I love C.W. McCall, dude.
Very good. And you know what? That ties in at the end of his note here. I'll mention it tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Please do.
I thought you guys might be interested in a recent vacation. I started a shuttle launch viewing and ended as an epic road trip. Sort of focused on transportation.
I remember this email.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
This made us think of us. So he said he thought he'd just send a note, just some highlights. The final launch of the Space Shuttle Discovery, which was amazing, he said. They toured the USS Alabama, which is a battleship, the USS Drum, which is a submarine, and the USS Kidd, which is a destroyer. They saw an A-12, which was the precursor to the SR-71 Blackbird.
That's amazing, dude.
An F-14A at a different museum. In St. Petersburg, Florida, they stopped at the Salvador Dali Museum, outside of which they were setting up for the St. Petersburg Grand Prix, where they had Lamborghinis, Ferraris, Bentleys, Porsches, things like that, Porsche Carrera. Let's see. And they flew out of Little Rock and then drove a total distance of 1,923 miles over this trip. Said it was the best vacation ever. And
where's the convoy reference?
They hit here it is. They hit three state capitol buildings, a zoo, a Yingling brewery, and they even saw a convoy of microbuses, one of which was chartreuse.
Oh no, on a chartreuse microbus.
There you go.
That's from the God.
It's so the song Convoy. I love that song.
Dude, I know both of those songs by heart.
I think I do too.
Yeah. God.
Well,
I'm gonna go listen to it.
Rhinestone Cowboy,
Cowboy,
right in the same era.
Oh my gosh. Okay, before I turn this into a C.W. McCall fan hour, let me remember we can't go a whole hour. Allison writes in from Washington and says, hello, I recently bought a car, 1991 Mazda 323 hatchback, and started listening. I wonder if you could do a podcast on turning a diesel tractor into an electric tractor. We already read this one.
We did.
We did.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was in part six. That's all right. That was no problem. That happens because, like I said, we get a ton of email here, Ben.
So we gotta keep up with our notes here.
I think I may read some that you've got too. So do the same for me if that happens again. Okay.
You got it.
All right. So here's one from Gary.
Mm-hmm.
It says, well, you got some things wrong and you got some things right.
Thanks, Gary. We do try.
Yeah, really. No, first off, thanks. Love the podcast. Awesome learning while we're driving 30 minutes to and from work. Strange car fixes. Go to Mythbusters. He says that you can fix a radiator leak with an egg, which I think is interesting.
Cool.
Crack the egg open, pour it into the radiator, and kaboom, leak fixed for a while anyway. So it's similar to the pepper thing. Breaking in an engine. I mentioned that I stopped by an Audi dealership and talked to them. He says, well, VW and Audi have an 08, he has an 08 VW EOS with a 2-liter engine. And the manual states that there is a necessary break-in period for that engine.
Yeah, I remember this email.
This is exactly why we tell people always check your owner's manual for, you know, just to be sure about this stuff. But I did stop by the dealerships and asked them, and they said, no, it's not necessary. So here's where you get this conflicting information.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just go by the manual. He printed it out here, and it's very clear, you know, first 600 miles do this.
Yeah.
After 600 to 1,000 do that. It's very well laid out. So, just definitely check in on the break-in procedure.
Yeah. I've got a, speaking of that subject, I've got a pretty cool email from an old longtime listener, Saul.
Oh,
Saul,
yeah.
You remember Saul?
I do.
Yeah. Saul writes in, and when I say old, I mean, he's been listening to the podcast
from the very beginning.
Yeah. One of our first listener mails, actually. Yeah. So he says, hi guys. He's writing back on our engine break-in periods and, that podcast. And he says, I bought a car recently. The new car brings me back to why I'm riding today. In the owner's manual for this 2010 Honda Accord, there is a recommended vehicle break-in period regarding the max RPM for the first 600 miles.
Hmm.
I'm not sure why they recommend the break-in period, but there is a very specific range of limitations.
Well, what do you know?
Yeah, and he says, you also mentioned a break-in period for brakes. I just wanted to mention, having bought new tires, that those usually come with a manufacturer recommended break-in period as well. Not familiar with the break-in for brakes. I'm doing tongue twisters.
That's right.
But I have been told the tires are made in a mold lined with lubricant, which then impregnates the outer surfaces of the rubber with the lubricant. This lubricant then causes the tire traction to suffer until those outer layers wear out, generally about 500 miles.
I've never heard of that.
That is news. That is news.
I've never heard of the tire break-in, period.
That's very interesting, isn't it?
What I find most interesting is that here we've got two listeners that, you know, have clearly they laid out you know, the break-in procedure, whereas I'm getting from the dealers that it's not necessary. I wonder if it's just a matter of, you know, in the process of laying out the manuals, the owner's manual, it's just carry over from the prior year and no one has thought to remove that, or if maybe it's still necessary.
Because it's not harmful to your vehicle.
It's not harmful to do the break-in is what you're saying.
Right. That's what I mean. Okay. It's not harmful to do the break-in.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, again, check your owner's manual, everybody, but you'll get conflicting information if you just ask somebody versus what you read.
Because the only universal rule there is for any car is that if you were good to your vehicle and pay attention to it, it will be good to you.
Correct.
That's the only one that actually counts across all cars.
Yeah, true.
All right. True. What's next?
All right. Well, I got a couple things I just want to mention. Just throw some things out
there.
Yeah. This is no listener mail. I just want to a few things, put them on your radar here.
Mm-hmm.
I recently changed my cabin air filter in my car. We talked about this at the end of last one, once we were off air, right? I changed it and I showed you a photo of the before and after. It was disgusting. Cabin, again, not air filter, not for the engine.
Which is what I originally thought it was.
This is cabin air filter, which is the stuff that, you know, goes through before you breathe it. And, mine was covered with
like leaves.
Leaves. And
gunk.
I think there was a bee in there and maybe a moth, just twigs. And it was just full
just
of
road grime.
Dirt. I mean, it was loaded to the top of the pleats with junk.
Mm-hmm.
There's two filter elements and I changed them both into, you know, nice clean ones. And the system works much, much better. If anybody's having a problem with, the car, you can't seem to get the dust out of your car. You know, you dust the dashboard, you vacuum it, everything.
Comes back.
And it comes right back. That may be your problem. If your AC system is maybe not as cool as it was, you know, aside from the other things it could be.
Yeah.
Try a new cabin air filter as well if you haven't changed yours in a while. It just makes everything run smoother. My AC is a lot cooler now than it was. The airflow is just much greater than it was before. And there's a fresher scent mm-hmm. the car. It's just a clean air scent. And the dust problem is gone. It alleviated that as well. And, really, it's like $18 or something. They're very easy to get to. I just say anybody, because a lot of people forget about it unless somebody reminds them frequently right. about it. Yeah. And this is just kind of my, on a soapbox, check your cabin air filter. It's easy to do yourself and it's not very expensive and it makes a big, big difference in the quality of air in your car.
Did you guys hear that little dig there? He's like, unless you keep reminding them about it. Yes, Scott, I promise you, man. I'm going to do it because you're right. I probably need to change mine too because dust accumulates on the
dash. They say that you do it every 12 to 15,000 miles, right?
Yeah.
Mine had been in there, and I'll be honest, mine had been in there probably since I bought the car because I did it initially when I first bought it when the car had 30,000 miles.
Goodness gracious.
Car has 116,000 or something like that now. Mm-hmm. And that filter has been in there ever since. And it definitely takes its toll.
Yeah, I got a listener mail.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
I'll come back with some other stuff later.
Yeah. We'll come back in. So Paul writes to us, and stop me if you heard it, Scott. Paul says, hey, guys, just finished listening to the podcast on the Porsche 917, mm-hmm. and which I enjoyed quite a bit, 917. Mm-hmm. It is interesting to hear the parts of the story about the top drivers rejecting the car in the beginning. On the topic of fanboy cars, however, I grew up hearing of the mystical 959, and it still today stands at the top of my favorite cars of all time list. What I never understood is why this awesome machine was never street legal in the U.S. I always heard the story that Bill Gates has or had one, and even with his cash, never managed to get it on the road.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to hear if you could cover the 959 history.
I like that idea.
I do too, man.
I do, because that's one of those myths that's always been out there. I've heard mm-hmm. the 959 thing too.
I want to investigate that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Find out what's going on with that for real.
And back to you, Scott.
All right. Well, it was like newscast.
Yeah.
I like that.
Thank you.
All right. You know, one other thing I just want to mention here is there's some new Beetle talk going on around here. VW
yeah.
Beetle.
Mm-hmm.
New design. I don't really have a whole lot to say about this right now, but it is shooting for a new demographic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2012 model with a release date in fall of 2011. Just put it on your radar, take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting vehicle, and I think we're going to be doing a podcast on it soon, probably. I don't know. I just thought it was worth mentioning.
And the podcast will only improve. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it'll only get better if listeners let us know what they think too.
So exactly.
We can have something to draw off of.
Exactly. So that's one thing. Just the new Beetle is what I mm-hmm. want to mention. The other thing, you know what? This kind of ties into this. This is a question from Facebook that I got from a writer named Jeff and Jer.
Okay.
Two separate emails. Why don't car model years line up with the calendar years? You know, why do car makers either release things way early
mm-hmm.
or they hold off to the end? Like this Volkswagen Beetle is going to be, you know, released in fall of 2011 with the 2012 mm-hmm. Nameplate or year model year. So we'll talk about that too. I think that's something pretty simple, really. But
yeah.
You know,
it's interesting.
It's relatively recent too, because there used to be a single date in the year, a calendar date that mm-hmm. that the automakers would all release their new models, and it was a big deal.
Yeah.
People would go down to the dealerships and watch the unveiling of cars, and that just doesn't happen anymore.
No, not in tandem, not
so
in concert.
So I kind of like to talk about that in a little more detail. Mm-hmm. So let's hold on to that idea too.
So here's an email from Joel. He says, so as for backstory, there was this father-son team out here in Seattle who decided to drop an LS1 motor, 350 horsepower, from a Corvette or Camaro into an 85 BMW 325i. Hmm. Okay. The son was a mechanical engineering student, and he catted up a lot of the parts, documented the process, wrote a guide, which he now sells to other people. Since then, a lot of people have done this swap, putting a 350-plus horsepower into a 2,500-pound car. So what got me thinking about a podcast was about a month ago when I decided that a good graduation present to myself would be putting a 430-horsepower LS3 into my own BMW, a 1991 318 IS.
Very nice.
So, he says, a podcast about hybrid cars or the crazy amount of work that it takes to do these kind of swaps in modern cars as opposed to a 60s car.
So when he says hybrid car, he's talking about a new engine, a giant engine in a smaller vehicle.
Nail on the head, Mr. B.
Okay, or just a different engine in a different vehicle. So, okay, good point.
Good point.
We've talked about swapping some engines.
Yeah, we did.
I know we've done some blog posts.
We did an engine swap. I love the stats on that.
Yeah,
because if you think about the 400-plus horsepower engine that he's talking about putting into his BMW.
Yeah, that's got to be great.
It's going to have some zip.
I mean, you know, we talked about like the Archie kits, I think is what they call them, where they put a V8 into a Fiero.
Yeah.
Right, which is insane, but it's excellent for kit car applications.
Mm-hmm.
If not just leaving it as a Fiero with a V8, which is pretty cool too.
On its own. Yeah.
So, okay, you know what I'm going to do, Ben?
What's
I'm going to go through and just give you basically the topics. We're not going to read a lot of these now.
Okay, do some rapid fire.
I'm going to rapid fire through a few, and then I've got one more quick thing I want to mention that's not listener mail, but, so if you hear your name here, this is just a topic idea and we're thinking about them. Jim writes in with a podcast show idea, about OBD2, onboard diagnostics, and, you know, the check engine light thing. So that's a good idea. Bouche writes in with a new idea. He wants to hear about abandoned buildings and, you know, Bouche,
we had Bouche before.
Yeah, lots of times. Yeah, yeah. Lots of times. So, hey, how's it going?
What's up?
He wants to hear about some of these abandoned buildings and finding some of these old, the Harley Shack or the velodrome that's in Detroit that's abandoned that people are trying to bring back and things like that. So this is a great idea. You know, bringing some of these back as like state historic landmarks.
Cool, yeah.
Some of the stuff that's been abandoned. So that's a fantastic idea. Mm-hmm. And that I think the Google Earth may help some in this because you're able to locate some things that you might not have been able to from the ground.
And write to the local reps, representatives in that area because it's a big thing too for your state representatives to be able to say, oh, we found this, let's save it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So he's talking about abandoned buildings and like some production facilities that are noteworthy and historic. So good idea, Bouche. We'll do that. Another one from Facebook. This is from Robert and has an unusual suggestion. This is one's about songs that include they're like automotive theme songs, I guess. Not so much driving songs, but songs that have like Little Deuce Coupe or the old Little Old Lady from Pasadena are his suggestions. So get the idea, but something that
Mustang Sally might be fun.
Yeah, exactly. It might be fun to do something about that. Okay, that's one you just read. Here's one from Facebook from Kirby. Might want to do a show on Chaparral race cars, which is a good idea.
Yeah.
Some of the coolest cars ever made, according to Kirby. I think I might agree. Also one on the Ariel Atom, which is an excellent idea.
Uh-huh.
Here's one from Chad Chad doesn't say where he's from. Goes by the nickname Roadkill.
We featured Roadkill in an earlier episode.
Oh, did we?
He's been emailing us a lot, though.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We got a lot of them here recently, too, but this one mentions the backup camera and how easy it is to actually find and install one. And he found one for about $60. Mm-hmm. It says making parallel parking in a college town a lot easier because he's got a full-size truck.
Yeah. I think this is the one we read earlier.
Oh, did we? Oh, my apologies. Okay, so sorry about that. But here's an... here's another one from Chad. Here's a correction on me, I guess. So I'm going to read it.
Oh, okay.
Make sure you guys are probably get a lot of pet peeve corrections, but I have one for you, Scott. Every time you say asphalt, you say it with an H, which is not the word. It's not asphalt. I assume you say it without thinking about it. Good point, Chad. He's right. I do say asphalt, and I think I might blame my parents for this one, Ben. I've always felt weird about saying asphalt in front of my parents as I was a little kid, which is weird, but I just carried it on ever since. I don't know. Strange.
That's funny. Here, I'll give you a quick break just to let people know there's a really interesting thing going on with basic engine innovation right now. As you recall, spark plugs are one of the consumables of an engine.
Yes.
Unless these researchers have their way. Tom Shenton, an engineering scholar at Liverpool University, is looking for a way to use focused beams of lasers in place of spark plugs.
Awesome.
Just to let really you guys cool. know.
I think I heard that Ford is working on this as well, right? That Ford is one of the ones that's kind of pioneering this. And
saying, they're spearheading a lot of the research. They hope to put the laser ignition systems in their top-of-the-line vehicles within the next couple of years.
Awesome.
So that's how it happens a lot of times with these kind of innovations. You try them out at the top end.
Yep. Freaking engines with freaking laser beams.
I got one more thing, but why don't you do some listener mail for
sure. Okay, we got a couple here. This is this one's from Bridger. Facebook suggestion also, and this is one that you mentioned last week, Ben, the Shell Eco Marathon. You know, these extremely high mileage vehicles that are, They're science projects, really.
Yeah.
But it's really cool, and you wouldn't believe some of the mileage that these cars are getting. If you haven't ever looked into the Shell Eco Marathon, mm-hmm. worthwhile. Should I just go ahead and blow it here, how many miles they're getting?
Do it. Do it.
Ballpark, 10,000 miles per gallon.
Per gallon.
That's for some of these, like, maybe fuel cell vehicles. The ones that are true combustion engines still, you're still getting somewhere in, like, 3,000 miles per gallon.
Yeah, it's all over 1,000.
Yeah, it's like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 miles per gallon in these cars. They're unbelievable. So,
and I believe this is normal fuel, too.
Yeah, that's right.
So I mean, it's fuel or anything.
No, it's sponsored by Shell, and it's been going on for decades.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing this since – well, I hate to comment on the year right now, but I think it's been going on since the 40s or 50s.
Let's,
long, long time.
Should I go or you want to go?
You know what? Let me do a couple real quick and then I'll be done. Facebook from Nick. First Robotics. Good idea.
Great idea.
Mossy writes in, wants to know, between Subaru all-wheel drive and other all-wheel drive systems, which one's better or what makes one different from the other? Good idea.
Good idea. Good question.
Not that one. Here's one from Joe. Joe writes in about, you know, something that we made want to talk about in the future, a podcast idea. The Honda Rebel 450, which is only made for 2 years due to a lawsuit from Harley-Davidson. Mm. Even though Harley-Davidson lost the suit, Honda quit making the bike. First bike also to have tubeless spoke rims. So that's interesting. So we'll maybe talk about that one.
He's right, isn't he?
Yeah.
right.
I guess so.
Cool. Okay. Good idea.
Anthony writes in and says, and it's not Anthony, it's Anthony, writes in on Facebook and says he'd like to know the history of diesel engines, which I think we might have already done some of that.
Yeah, we've done some of that.
Adonis writes in and says that he'd like to hear about Prince Motors and Skylines being banned from racing for being too fast or powerful. So again, maybe one of these myths, but we'll find out. Converting a non-U.S. car to meet U.S. standards. So I think he's right, but there are, you know, it's rule change type things that have happened. So Dean writes in about the Karmann Ghia, one of the most beautiful cars ever made, according to Dean. So we'll maybe talk about the Karmann Ghia. And Adonis wrote in again about a rotary-powered Vette that maybe never made it. I didn't know about that. Technology of the past that failed but is now back.
Okay. That's a good idea.
Also mentions running an engine on a soda can. I think he's talking about a Stirling engine made from a soda can. I've seen that online.
Yeah. You can see those.
Intake electric turbo scams. Okay. Got that. Additives to increase octane. Do those really work? An automatic trans prevalent in America. Why is that? Is it because we're so lazy? I don't think so.
No, we talked about some of the concerns.
And that about wraps up for my listener mail part. I've got one other thing I'd like to mention later, but
I'll do this. I've got one last thing. I'll do this, and then it goes to you, okay? And then you'll have the last word, and then we'll end it. You did a great job. Don't beat yourself up. You did a great job. All right, so we talked about automated cameras, like the cameras that will write you a ticket.
Yes.
At intersections,
yes.
Red light cameras. Well. I've got a news report here that shows the New Orleans annual operating budget indicates the city government has increased its reliance on revenue from red light and speed cameras to cover holes in their operating budget.
Mm.
Revenue from red light cameras increased from $3.4 million in 2008 to a projected $18 million in 2011. That's an increase of 419%.
$18
million? $18
million. Wow.
And a lot of people are a lot of locals have a problem with that because the senator, Danny Martin, from Metairie, wants to eliminate speed cameras across the state, and he's not surprised by the revenue increases because he thinks the city avoids putting cameras in poor neighborhoods and targets wealthy areas instead. He says that classifying red light camera tickets as an administrative violation instead of a criminal violation allows the justice system to circumvent the standard rules associated with the submission of evidence.
Wow.
So this stuff really is a hot button issue. We talked before about how you can have more safety. We had some listeners write in and say that the yellow lights get changed, that the timing changes in a way that makes you more likely to have a ticket. But here we have an actual U.S. senator – who's saying that there is something rotten at your local intersection.
Oh, I see charts and graphs and everything over
charts
there,
and graphs.
But 400% increase? That's amazing.
That is amazing, but that's one of those, you know, it's like what Mark Twain said about statistics. You know, when they say that it had 3.4 million in 2008, how many more cameras did they build over the next 3 years?
Yeah.
You know what? So it may not just be one factor.
Okay, understood. All right, so you can bend the statistics to fit. And I understand. But it seems like that's a dramatic increase. It seems like there's something going on there.
It does seem like
and
someone's –
And that's New Orleans only, right? That's just a fact for
– Yeah, this doesn't apply to the rest of the state. It doesn't apply to the rest of the United States.
Wow.
Okay. One snapshot. What do you got?
Unbelievable. This is the last thing I've got here, and then we'll wrap it up because, man, we've gone long. I have been I've been playing around with the idea of putting an intake in my car, just a an air intake, and kind of going back and forth between buying a pre-assembled kit, something from K&N or Spectre or whoever, or building one on my own, because you can do this on your own out of parts that you buy, just here and there.
So time commitment.
It is, but you know what? I don't know which way is better. I would say that buying the kit is better from from K&N or whoever I want to go with. Probably K&N. It's expensive, but it just seems like it's all specifically built for that, and there could be no problem with it. I don't want any problem either. I've done this in other cars, and just gone with a K&N kit and been fine. It works out real well. But now I'm kind of interested in maybe doing it myself, and I've been going around and asking people about this, at different auto shops and a lot of places, and I'm getting some disappointing experiences out of this. I'm talking to managers at different facilities, different parts shops, which I won't name, but some of the big name ones. I'm talking to the managers of these places, and they don't really know what I'm talking about when I'm asking them about this stuff.
Ah, but our listeners will.
I think our listeners will.
Okay.
And I'm finding myself really, really frustrated because to me this seems like a pretty elemental, pretty simple thing that I would think a manager of an auto parts store would understand or know about. And I'm left, like kind of smacking my forehead. Like I can't believe that this person is the manager of an auto parts store. That's probably not fair, because I'm sure a lot of other managers are well suited for this and have all the answers. But am I just talking to the people that how is it that I'm going in and talking to people that have no idea?
Well,
regularly.
Well, we can't, I can't answer that question and our listeners can't answer that question, but they probably can give you the input you're looking for.
Yeah, and I don't mean to, be down on auto parts managers because I know there are a lot of them out there that know everything forward and back and far more than we know.
Yeah.
But really, I find it frustrating because, I know that it's in the parts in the system. They can look it up. They don't understand. Some of them, Ben, don't understand what an air intake system is. They're still looking for a filter.
What gives?
I don't know. And it's very, very frustrating. So I wonder if other listeners are having similar issues, because it's very, very frustrating.
Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up on a good note.
Yeah, it's still a good note.
It's still a good note.
I still want to do this project, and I'm having fun with it. But I'm kind of leaning towards the pre-made kit, the one that you just buy and put on. That's it.
So what do you guys think? Can you help Scott out in this decision? Do you have any pros or cons for the kit versus the DIY approach? If so, hit us up on Facebook. Let us know what you think on Twitter. You can find us on our website, howstuffworks.com. And go ahead and send us more listener mail. Obviously, we do read it.
Yeah, one quick thing, Ben.
Yeah.
As you're sending that listener mail, if you've got a photo of an intake kit that you've built yourself, because some people have some pretty wild kits that they've made, I'd like to see some photos. So if you've got a chance and you can attach a photo with that email, go ahead and send it to us at carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.